This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
And good morning, everybody, on this kind of crazy foggy day on Saturday. Kind of an interesting one because, again, interesting football coming up this weekend. Lots of stuff to talk about. Mariners stuff to talk about. All those things are going to be in play. Give us a call at 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's get started with some headlines. Well, the Mariners did not get Shohei Ohtani. He ends up taking a deal from the Angels, and so all those trades that the Mariners tried to work out did not work out in getting Ohtani. They still have $3.55 million in international money, and they gave up a lot of the prospects to try to increase that, but they did get D. Gordon in the trade. And, of course, now news today, Giancarlo Stanton ends up signing or getting a deal from Miami, the Marlins, going over to the Yankees. And so the Yankees, you know, already Derek Jeter's helping out the Yankees big time right now because he gives them the player that they're all looking for, the player that they had hoped to get, and now you put him in there with that lineup, that good young lineup they have. Yankees all of a sudden back toward the top. As far as football goes, the Seahawks right now, they won't have Ode Abushi, who's going to go on injured reserve. A little setback right now for Chris Carson. His ankle flared up a little bit, and so because of that, they now have to go and wait and see if he's going to be able to do anything in the next couple of weeks. You know, that setback, that kind of really hurt them because, again, they were hoping that he was going to be out there and was going to be able to do some things, but at this stage, he is not. So they hope to get him for the final two games of the season. We'll see where he ends up as far as that goes. As far as, it's the rest of the health of the team, you know, game time decision on Deion Jordan. Jacksonville will not have Allen Hurns, their wide receiver. He's going to be out. So overall, Mariners right now and Seahawks, interesting times. And, of course, those are our headlines. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's get started with JB in Renton. Hey, JB.
Hey, Mr. Clayton. How are we doing this foggy Saturday morning?
Doing well. How about you?
Oh, can't complain at all. Okay. Well, I can complain.
Okay.
We need to cut out Thursday night football, Mr. Clayton.
Yeah.
Too many injuries, Mr. Clayton.
True. Six injuries for the Saints.
After that game Thursday night.
What's that again?
I said my team looked like a mash unit after that game Thursday night.
Yeah, they really did.
Jeez. I mean, we lost a lot. The one thing it is not some major injuries, but it can affect you coming down the line. I mean, why are we playing Thursday night football in December?
If you
get into the end of the year where injuries start to compile, you need to get more rest than anything.
Yeah, but of course now you're taking revenue out of the game. I mean, you're taking more than $500 million away, and the impact of that. And again, I know money is not the most important thing, but you know how it works in sports, and you know how it works for players and owners. I mean, you would take $7 million off the cap and $132,000 off the average salary of players if you would eliminate the Thursday games.
Yeah, like we talked about earlier, maybe you could try to correlate that with the bye week. That Thursday game, like the two teams that are on the bye play that Thursday, then come around 10 days later and get back into the flow of the game. Would that make sense?
Can't be done. I mean, you can try it, but see, the problem is the only way you can do that mathematically is if you would add a week to the season. Because remember, I mean, you have 6-7 weeks where there's no bye weeks, and you have London games where you have needs to try to have the team have a bye week after that. And so to configure everything is it's all not impossible, but it's very difficult to do.
Yeah, it is. Well, let's talk about something. The Gronkowski hit.
Yeah.
Now, what did you think about that?
I may be a little bit more lenient than everybody else. I mean, it deserved to be a suspension. I agree with that. You know, but I think that. It's not a clear enough line to take it more than one game, you know, because I thought the one with Aqib Talib, with the swinging incident with Michael Crabtree, that should have stayed two, and they turned it to one. And so, you know, it kind of goes back and forth, and that's what kind of drives me crazy about the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, there is no consistency when it comes to those suspensions as far as that's concerned, because, I mean, Talib and Crabtree, they were facing each other. I mean, it was stupid. There was no place in football for it. Uh-huh. But to get a man, Mr. Clayton, when his face is down on the ground and come do that, I mean, that's egregious.
No, that was bad. I agree about that.
I mean, you know, you could possibly take a person out of the game of football. I mean, look at the injury to Ryan Shazier with his spine.
Right.
I mean, he might not be able to play anymore. That was on the field of play. You know?
Agreed.
And to jump on a man to put him 260 pounds to his neck, man, that was a little over the top for me.
I agree.
I really thought it should have been a 3-game suspension myself.
Yeah, but I think what you have to do is you have to take into account, past performances and, you know, what the guy has done in the past, because, you know, I could be wrong, but that's the first time he's done that. Now, if you're going to have, because think about this, if you're going to have Vontaze Burfict, right? If you're going to have Ndamukong Suh, if you start doing it that way, well, I mean, those guys would never be able to play.
Well, I think a little payback came back to old Vontaze Burfict in that game on Monday night, huh?
Yeah, it did.
Geez.
That was ugly.
That was ugly.
No, that was really bad.
Yeah, that game there got a little out of hand there. I mean, the refs, I don't know if they couldn't sustain or try to get it back in coordination. That game kind of got out of hand.
Agreed.
That Monday night. Yeah, but let's talk about Sunday.
Okay.
Minnesota and Carolina, Mr. Clayton.
That's going to be a good one.
I'm going with the Vikings again.
Okay.
I think the Vikings, their defense, Mr. Clayton, I tell you right now, I just don't see teams right now built right now to deal with them. You know, Case Keenum is playing good enough to do what you have to do, but their defense is playing even better to do what you know. I mean, they're getting you off of the field on third down. They're putting you in down and distance. They're not allowing you to get on their side of the field and operate and do what you want. You end up with a field goal.
Right.
You know the definition of in and over field goals. You probably won't win the game.
No. You don't want to trade touchdowns for field goals. No question.
Yeah. So, I mean, Minnesota and Carolina, the way I look at Carolina, I think Minnesota can go there and deal with them. What do you think?
I still think that you're still going to be Case Keenum going up against Cam Newton, and you think the advantage on that's going to be maybe Cam Newton?
You would think so.
Him,
because he's the better, you know, and I know he is the better quarterback than Case Keenum.
This is going to be the test to see if Case Keenum's going to be good enough to be a Super Bowl caliber quarterback, which I don't think he is. Because I don't think anybody's going to confuse him with a Super Bowl caliber quarterback. So what you see is, you know, and that's where, I mean, here's the thought that I had last year. Dak Prescott was sensational. Got them to 12 wins for Dallas, played great football, but they would have had to have Tony Romo in the playoffs. They probably would have a chance to do better because he's more seasoned. In this case, I mean, you've got Case Keenan, who is going to be the least talented quarterback of the quarterbacks who are going to be in the NFC playoffs. And, you know, again, if he has home games, fine. But if he's going to be on the road, I think he's going to be beatable. And so that's why I think in a game like this, I would lean toward thinking it's going to be, maybe Carolina. But we'll see. I mean, that's why it's going to be a good test to see, all right, how good is Minnesota with Case Keenum at quarterback in a big game like this?
Definitely. I'm going to take Minnesota on that. What about the Rams? The Rams in Philadelphia. I think Philadelphia have a bounce-back game.
I do, too. I just think they're the better team. And I think that, it's an up-and-coming Rams team. You know, they've done good things. But I think that Eagles' defense is good enough to contain them. And I think their offense is really good. So I would lean toward, the Eagles in this one. And, again, the crowd's going to be a factor more for the Eagles than it's going to be for anything going on with this team. Because, remember, what you have is, a lot of Eagle fans flying out to the game to see them. And, you know, they're buying all the tickets. And I know that even Sean McVay has had to institute the silent count, worried that the crowd is going to be too loud in favor of the Eagles.
You know, that's weird. But, you know, I heard Dan Marino talk years ago about that, about how many transplants of Pennsylvanians live all over the country.
Right.
Like, you remember the Philadelphia game with the L.A. Chargers?
Right.
I mean, there were more Eagle fans there than there were Charger fans.
Uh-huh, agreed.
Yeah, I mean, you're exactly right about that. Mr. Clayton, we got to talk about that AFC West. What is going on with Kansas City?
Several things. First off, I mean, their defense has been bad all season. And that's a surprise because they give up more big plays than anything else. Then, after about eight games, people started figuring out what to do with Andy Reid. They drop back in cover two. They try to make sure that they keep the ball in front of them. And that's really worked to a great degree because now you can see they're just simply not able to move the ball that well. And they're taking the checkdowns. And so they're not getting big plays. They go from 32 to about 18 points a game. They still give up 25, 28 points a game. And that combination is just deadly.
I mean, for a team that started off 5-0, you looked at all the promise they had.
Mm-hmm.
The last six games, they lost five of them or something like that?
They've lost six out of seven.
Six out of seven.
Yeah.
Oh, my. I mean, and, you know, what a way to fall from grace.
Agreed.
To start off like that in the season.
Mm-hmm.
Are the Cowboys going to have a rebound game with the Giants with Eli Manning back in the starting lineup?
I mean, they're the Giants right now. They're terrible.
They're awful.
Think that they will.
I mean, that's terrible.
Yeah.
That is just terrible. And what a way, you know, such a quality owner, those owners, the way the Teshes and the Maras are quality owners,
mm-hmm.
to have that situation going down like that with the Giants.
Right.
I mean, it's just unbelievable to see that go on with that franchise right now, as far as that's concerned. You know, the Cowboys are what, maybe 2 weeks away from getting Ezekiel Elliott?
2 weeks back, yeah. They're getting back in two.
Yeah. Do you think anybody that's below the wild card runners right now in the NFC, how do you see that projecting out?
I think it's going to be, I mean, you have to have 10 wins to make it in. And there's maybe one or two 10-win teams, depending if Green Bay, you know, because Green Bay will beat the Cleveland and be 7-6, and that gets them three games with, having Aaron Rodgers, so they may be able to run three, and that gets them to 10. But if that's going to be the case, and, you know, Detroit has an easy closing schedule, but they'll find a way to screw one game up and get to nine.
They will.
So you have to have 10 to get in, without question.
Who do you see getting to that 10 threshold? Would it be Seattle, Carolina, Atlanta?
Yeah, Seattle, Carolina. I mean, all right, so you've got Minnesota's already there. Philadelphia's already there. You know, you've got the Rams. You've got Carolina. You've got Seattle. So, I mean, it's pretty rich right now to be able to do that. That's why, you know, 10 wins has got to get you in.
You know, compared to the
end. And I don't know. I think Atlanta's not going to be able to make it.
I think they're gonna have a tough time. They got to go back to New Orleans and play in New Orleans too.
Right.
And I think they have to travel to Carolina, or they play Carolina at home. If I'm not mistaken, one of the two. I know they got a couple of games that's gonna be very. I don't think they'll make it.
No, I think we all agree on that.
You think Seattle will make it, Mr. Clayton?
The question's going. I mean, really, this is going to be the game that's going to determine if they. If they win this one, then they have a chance to be big players in this thing, because I think they'll beat the Rams next week because they are at home and they've already beaten them once,
mm-hmm.
and that gets the division. Now, the question is, you know, the way the South is going, you know, they're starting to maneuver to be a third seed, and, you know, Seattle still has a chance to maybe be a third seed, but I think it's going to still be hard for the Seahawks or even the Rams to be able to get that number one or number two seed. I think that's going to go to Philadelphia or Minnesota. Hey, JB got a run.
All right, Mr. Clayton, have a good weekend. We'll talk next weekend, my friend.
Thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
Load up those phone lines at 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Raider Jim. Hey, Jim, how are you?
Well, good morning, John. How are you?
Good.
Fantastic. John, before we talk about the silver and black, I wanted to talk a little bit about the Steelers and the Bengals. Boy, those teams just do not like each other.
No, it's pretty bad.
Yeah, it's real. I mean, I remember when Carson Palmer came over in a trade from the Bengals to the silver and black. And, you know, Carson Palmer's a pretty mellow guy. Very, you know, he's got that L.A. mentality of being pretty low-key about
mm-hmm,
things.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing's going to bother him, but... Boy, he was real emotional when he talked about the Bengals' dislike for the Steelers. And I get just because I don't follow those teams, I didn't realize, but it makes sense. And then, they just do not like each other.
No, it's pretty bad, and I think it's now kind of gotten to the point where it's out of control. I mean,
right.
You know, the carryover effect of what these guys want to do to each other is really bad. I mean, because it's not a matter of just winning the game. They want to inflict damage to the players on the other team, and that's not good.
No, that's definitely not good, and I agree with that, John. And, I mean, a lot of things are just kind of out of control, and we'll get to that in just a second. But, I mean, Sean Payton out there with New Orleans, I mean, I've never seen him so heated.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just kind of...
Well, how about the choke sign?
Did you read Mike Mitchell's comments the other day?
Yeah.
About how the game and his philosophy on his role... in the backfield, the defensive backfield for the Steelers.
Yeah, I mean, complaining about the penalties and the fines and the ejections and stuff like that.
Well, yeah, and I mean, I read his whole. I mean, at least the entire article. I read the entire.
Right.
You know, because he was drafted by the Raiders out of the University of Miami in the third round some years ago, and then he bounced around and he ended up with the Steelers. I mean, he's a good all around player. He's an enforcer. Let's face it. But, I mean, he was saying, look, I just can't stop doing what I'm doing because of how the game has progressed and the velocity of the game and how quick it is and the reactions you need to make.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, what do you want me to do, go out and play flag football? And I mean, it was a derisive comment, but by the same token, I mean, I've played defense when I played football. I mean, I understand that. I mean, I'm sure Dave Wyman would agree with that, too.
Oh, yeah, no, because, like, and he always says that the problem is, it's like, okay, so you're going full speed. How do you stop? I mean, because you're going full speed with instincts. It's not a matter where you're sitting there where you can deliberate and, be precise on things. That's just not the case.
Right. You have to make quick, they say you have a high twitch.
Yeah.
Well, you've got to make quick reactions in order to keep up with things. Otherwise, things are just going to blow by you.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I do have sympathy for a lot of these players when they get called for these penalties. Okay, so the Silver and Black are in a three-way tie for first place. And being the rational Raider fan I am, I take a somewhat of a different view on these things. I mean, the last two games they've played have been against, let's face it, subpar competition.
Right.
And so, I'm thinking, okay, well, this is a big game. I mean, somewhat like the Steelers, actually. They play to the level of their competition. But this is a big game, John. I mean, this is going to be a defining game for both franchises this season, Kansas City and the Raiders. What do you think, John?
Right now, I mean, almost lean toward the Raiders, but this is a defining game because, if you look at a lot of things, they don't match up against good physical teams, not match up well against good physical teams, and, the Chiefs are a good physical team, but the Chiefs' defense is playing worse than the Raiders' defense. They don't have any cornerbacks. Think about that. They suspended Marcus Peters for throwing the flag in the stands.
Right.
Okay? So now you take him away. The three cornerbacks that didn't alternate on the other side have been so bad they brought in Darrell Revis. Revis gets burned for about four passes in the first half, and they bench him after one half.
Right.
So what do they really
right.
have at corner to go against the Raiders?
Yeah, for me, I mean, at this time of the season, this is what I end up doing. I end up watching all the games from the I watch the Chargers game, I watch the Denver game, and I watch the Chiefs game just to see what the AFC West is doing. And then I read all the press in those various different markets. Like this week, I was checking out the press in Kansas City, the Kansas City Star, and good stuff on there. I mean, and it gives you an objective eye. It gives you like a counterbalance of what I normally read, as a Raider fan. And they were saying that with the Marcus Peters situation. First, I was surprised about that, but I'm glad Andy Reid did it. I mean, that just
Had to do it.
You need to control your team. And
absolutely.
He's been going half-cocked off for a while. They were saying something interesting. They were saying, is he a cultural fit for Kansas City? Is he a good fit for that town? And, there's something to be said for that, John, as far as what a player does and what that player represents to the franchise and the overall community in which they serve.
Mm-hmm. I mean, listen, it's like he would be great in the Seahawk locker room because he's one of the alpha dog type guys. I think he's fine, but he does have to find a better way of controlling himself. And he's not doing that right now. That's something that that he's got to learn how to do because it's kind of fallen apart and it's going to get him in trouble.
Right. Alex Smith is doing a little better, it seems, John, at least the last game he played. What do you
think? Yeah, well, the play calling, I think that kind of Andy must have thought it got stale. And if that's the case, then they tried to fix things up a little bit. And, they let Matt Nagy do the play calling and he did a good job coming out of the box, getting the ball downfield. They simply weren't getting the ball downfield. And that's because it was all check down. And that just kind of drives you crazy. So it's better now, but still, they're asked to score so many points because the defense has been so bad.
Right, right. And the Washington Redskins are going to be down in Los Angeles playing the Chargers. What do you think about that game? I think
the Chargers.
6-6.
There's just so many injuries right now that's there for the Redskins. I mean, they're just so banged up.
Yeah, because they were playing very well at the beginning of the season.
Right.
I mean, Cousins. Boy, I'm impressed with the way he plays.
Yeah.
Okay, well, what do you think then? You think there's going to be only one team coming out of the AFC West, John?
Absolutely. Well, because, I mean, you got two teams in the AFC South that are 8-4, and honestly, the team in the West, I mean, I can't see any of these teams coming out with more than 9 wins.
Right.
And if that's going to be the case, I mean, you make it at 9 and try to do the best you can.
Right, right. And it looks like Amari Cooper is going to be able to play. At least that's the rumor. I mean, he did practice on Friday, and they didn't think he would. And they game-planned because they didn't think he would. And, boy, that's going to be a potent punch against a team that, as you just said, don't have much in the defensive backfield on the corners, at least.
No, they really don't. And that's why, you know, they've got to see it's unfortunate that they had to suspend Marcus, but they really, as we both said, they had no choice.
Yeah.
Hey, Jim, thank you for the phone call.
Okay, John, take care.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Tell you what we'll do. We're going to come back. We're going to talk Jacksonville Jaguars football. Mike DeRocca from ESPN.com joins us next. It's John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Joining us right now, Mike DeRocca from ESPN.com, covers the Jacksonville Jaguars. And so, big game tomorrow. I mean, is this considered to be the biggest game in Jacksonville in how many years?
Well, probably since 2010, you know, when they were still fighting for the playoffs at the end of the season. I know it's certainly been the biggest that I've covered, and since I started on this team, covering this team in 2013. So it's got finally got a big game atmosphere around here. So I'm looking forward to it tomorrow.
I can imagine. And so how well is this team prepared for this game?
I tell you, about as well as you can prepare for anybody. This defense is pretty competent. That they're going to be able to make enough plays. They're going to be able to limit Russell Wilson's big plays that he makes with his feet, especially when he gets out of the pocket and he's running around and DBs lose track of receivers. And the next thing you know, it's a 25-yard pass to Doug Baldwin. I think the thing that they're probably more concerned about is getting this running game going, because Leonard Fournette's averaging less than 3 yards a carry over the last month. You know, they've been banged up on the offensive line, but should be back to full strength this week. So that's probably their number one concern going into the game on Sunday.
So how bad is that ankle injury? Because it seems to have really slowed Fournette down.
Yeah, it's one of those ankle injuries that, you know, it's not a bother for him during the week. You know, he's able to practice, and, you know, it doesn't cost him to miss a lot of snaps on Sunday, but it just kind of robs him of a little bit of explosiveness, a little bit of the burst. There were some runs last week where he got to the edge that I thought, you know, earlier in the season in September, first part of October, he would have taken that down the sideline for, you know, a huge gain, if not a touchdown. And he just seemed like a half step slow. Still got like 10, 12 yards, but he just doesn't seem to have the same burst. And I think that's, you know, he's told us, hey, look, I'm not going to be 100%. Until I can rest this ankle, and with the season going on, I can't rest it. So he just has to manage it throughout the rest of the year. And the Jags really have to do, honestly, a better job of getting Chris Ivory and T.J. Yeldon involved to take maybe a little bit of the workload off of Fournette.
Okay, how do you explain Blake Bortles' season so far? I mean, obviously, that's the big elephant in the room, because whether it's local or national, no, there's not a lot of believers.
Right. Well, I'll say this. It was more than just cutting down turnovers for Blake Bortles. It was cutting down the killer turnovers. And those are, you know, the throws when you're getting picked off in the red zone. Those are the throws where you're deep in your own territory and you make a bad decision, and all of a sudden the opposing team's got the ball on your 18-yard line. You know, the pick sixes. He has eliminated all of those. So while he is still turning the ball over at roughly about the same rate, they're not the killer turnovers. Now, the other thing is, you know, they needed to be able to rely on him to win games at some point in the season. You know, you're going to have to do that as a quarterback. And the two chances that he had, he didn't come through. He threw those two interceptions late in regulation, late in the last 2 minutes against the Chargers. Now they were able to get a field goal and then win it in overtime thanks to an A.J. Boye interception that set them up inside the 10-yard line. And then against the Arizona Cardinals a couple of weeks ago, they're driving for potential winning field goal, and he throws an awful pass at Tyrann Mathieu, intercepted. So those are the two big things that I look at as the huge negatives for him this year. They've leaned on him twice to win games, and he hasn't been able to come through. And I think this is going to be another one of those games where they're going to need him in the fourth quarter to do something to help them win a game.
And that's the thing that's so crazy, how bad he's been in the fourth quarter. I mean, what's he have, like about a 56% quarterback rating, and where you have Russell Wilson, who has 15 fourth-quarter touchdown passes, tying the NFL record, and he's got four games left, and Russell Wilson's completing like 70.2% of his passes in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, well, the thing about Bortles' previous years, he was actually, his numbers are pretty good in the fourth quarter, but that had been because, you know, they were behind by a lot. They were throwing against prevent defenses. It was easier to complete some of those passes, so that's why his numbers look so good. Now, you know, like I said, he's had to win a couple of games and failed. They haven't really relied on him in the fourth quarter and some other games. You know, they've won a bunch of games big. Five wins, I think, by 20 or more points this year, which leads the NFL. So, you know, they really haven't had him to do a lot of work in the fourth quarter. But it's a concern. I mean, look, there's still a chance he could be around here next year, but he's clearly not the elite guy that they thought they were going to have in year four when they drafted him, third overall in 2014.
Yeah, and that's what I kind of wonder about the whole thing, because, again, I mean, it's safe to say that the Jags are going to make the playoffs. I think it's with an 8-4 record and a bad conference right now, one win or two wins is all it's going to need to get this into the playoffs, whether it's the wild card or the division. But, you know, they still might be looking for a quarterback. I mean, I don't know if they go Eli Manning, if they go Young or whatever. But, I mean, it seems like that's the one thing that everybody on the Jaguars seems to worry about. It's like, okay, defense phenomenal, offense getting better, plenty of talent, but there's Blake Bortles.
Yeah, and you know, to be fair to Bortles, he doesn't have Allen Robinson, you know, who was lost in the season opener, torn ACL, and that's their best offensive player after Fournette. Fournette's been banged up a little bit. He doesn't have really a lot of wide receiver depth. Marquise Lee is their number two, and their number three, Allen Hurns, has been hurt, so they're relying on a couple of rookies. And they don't have anything at tight end in terms of a pass catcher. So, you know, those are some mitigating circumstances. But the thing I look at it, John, and go, hey, look, this defense, this isn't a 10-year defense. You know what I mean? There's some free agent guys that you're going to have some decisions on. You're going to have to make, you know, Marcell Dareus, Malik Jackson, some big money coming up. You know, this is probably a 2 or 3 year window with this defense at this level. Is it better off in 2018 to go grab a vet, whether it's a guy like a Sam Bradford or Alex Smith, if he's available, you know, plug that guy in and win that way and draft a young quarterback and give him some time to develop? Because I just don't know if drafting the young guy and throwing him in right away is going to make them any better offensively than they are now. It's possible, but I do think if they had a guy like an Alex Smith, for example, on this year's team, they probably would be 10-2 at this point.
Interesting. Now, when you look at the how they can keep this team together, I mean, they did a great job. I mean, Calais Campbell may have been the best free agent signing, but A.J. Boye probably is pretty close, because now the best 1-2 cornerback punch in the NFL, and then you throw in Marcell Dareus. I mean, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, and the Dareus trade has been fantastic for them, because they were 32nd, I think, in the NFL in rush defense before he got there, and now they're like 16th, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Since he's been there, they're allowing only 83 yards a game rushing, and, you know, that's 7th in the NFL over that time, over the last 4 games. So he's been a huge addition. But, you know, the Calais Campbell signing was phenomenal, as we know, and you mentioned Boye. But the signing that I look at, too, that probably doesn't get enough publicity is adding Barry Church in the secondary. Jonathan Cyprian was a mess back there, missed a ton of tackles. Church is such a solid, steady player, and he gives them the ability to do a lot of different things, because you couldn't put Jonathan Cyprian back as a single high safety.
at times because you knew that was just going to be a disaster. But they're able to do that with Barry Church. And plus, you've got Jalen Ramsey, who's got a huge ego. Tayshaun Gibson's got a huge ego. And, you know, A.J. Boye is a quiet guy, but certainly you have to be a confident, cocky kid when you're playing cornerback. So that room needs a very steadying presence, and that's exactly what Barry Church has been. Played a lot of football. They really respect him. They call him Uncle Church. And to me, that's been an unheralded free agent signing that's probably as important as some of those other guys.
Well, I remember one thing that Gus Bradley told me last year at training camp was that you know, they thought they did a great job of assembling a great group of athletes, but the things that he was a little bit worried about was not having that veteran leadership. And Barry Church, Calais Campbell, I mean, those are guys that bring great leadership.
Yeah, and Campbell especially. Look, it's no coincidence that his locker is right next to Leonard Fournette's locker. I don't care. They said that that was a happenstance and those lockers were assigned by random. No chance. No chance at all. I mean, they know that they have two guys like in Church and Campbell that can really calm the locker room, keep things from getting out of hand, and really just lead by example with their work ethic. And that's what those two guys have done. And it's, you know, with Campbell especially, I mean, it's not just defensive guys. Offensive guys gravitate towards him. I've seen him, you know, talking with Bortles several times coming into the locker room after practices, you know, and you know, they're not talking football stuff. They're just talking life stuff. So, I mean, he's a guy that everybody respects. And when you have that and you can mix that in with some really great young elite talent, you get a pretty good unit, and that's where they're at right now.
Yeah, the one thing I think is kind of interesting, too, when you see it, is that now you, as you mentioned, is Gibson now playing more strong safety but with Barry Church playing the deep safety, or how's that working?
They're using them interchangeably at times. Sometimes they're bringing Gibson down close to the line of scrimmage as that box safety, and other times he'll play, you know, single high. Sometimes they'll play Church back there at single high. Sometimes that, you know, they've even talked about one time, you know, as a twist every once in a while, putting Ramsey and Boye back there at safeties. That hasn't happened. It was a funny premise when they mentioned it, but they can use those guys interchangeably, and that's really helped them. You know, and Gibson, I think this week is going to draw Jimmy Graham when they're in some one-on-one issues there. So we'll see how that works because Graham is obviously a handful. But, you know, they just have so many more options back there, which is what they didn't have with Cyprian.
Yeah, no question. Now, how are they using Darius? I know he's a big thing is starting to run, but he's not starting, is he?
No, he's relieving Avery Jones, and they're really kind of working him into the rotation more and more. You know, he's playing roughly about a third of the total snaps because he's not in there a lot on the rush package. That's Campbell and Malik Jackson and Fowler and Ngakoue. So he's really kind of the first, second down guy. And when you can see a significant difference. Avery Jones is a good player, a solid player, but he's not the anchor the middle of the field, nobody's moving me, two guys can lean on me and I'm still not moving guy that Darius is. And he's really, really helped. That's allowing those backers, obviously, to flow in and make some plays.
Interesting. Now, the mix on the offensive line, Luke Jokel not being there, and how that's kind of sorted out on the line.
Yeah, Cam Robinson, I think, has been fantastic for them. He's battling a little bit of an ankle injury as well, but certainly the people I talk to say he's better than Luke Jokel ever was at left tackle, and Cam's played 12 games. So that was a huge addition for them. You know, Brandon Linder has been okay. You know, he's the highest paid center in football, and you know, quite frankly, I expected a little bit more out of him. But Jeremy Parnell, the right tackle, has really played well, and that's really helped them. Now, he's missed the last three games with a knee injury. He was back last week, but previously missed the three games with a knee injury, and he's still kind of getting back into form. You know, John, when you watch this offensive line in the preseason, especially the second and third preseason games, they were awful. Awful. And that's why I thought there is no way this team would win more than four, five, six games. But they played so well in the first, you know, 8 weeks of the season, and then the injury started to mount a little bit. Patrick Amame, the left guard, is banged up. Parnell's banged up. Linder missed a bunch of games with an illness. So, you know, they really need to kind of get back into the form that they had in the first, you know, six, seven, 8 weeks of the season, especially for this stretch, because, you know, some of these, like the Texans and the Seahawks, they're pretty good against the run. So they've got to do some work here, and that offensive line has got to play better than it did last week and the last two or three weeks.
What kind of coaching do you see from Doug Marrone?
Tom Coughlin light, I guess you would call it.
Okay.
A little bit. You know, he came in and he, one of the first things he talked about was toughness. This team's got to get tougher. This, you know, accountability needs to be better. And, you know, he made a ridiculously mentally and physically exhausting training camp for this team. And a lot of us in the media wondered, boy, are they going to be able to, they're going to be exhausted. They're not going to be fresh. They're not going to be able to overcome this. And it's been fantastic in terms of how they've bounced back from that. It was, to me, one of the biggest surprises of the early part of the season. You know, and he's you know, pretty simple in what he wants to do. They want to run the ball, they want to play good defense, win some battles on special teams, and, you know, like I said, it's Tom Coughlin light, and they have gotten along really, really well. I wasn't sure how that was going to work, but how Tom Coughlin was going to be able to be okay with being off the sideline. You know, was he going to meddle? And he hasn't meddled. So this is Marrone's team, and I know people give Coughlin a ton of credit, and they should, but Marrone is a guy the players really respect. They really like him. He's got a dry sense of humor, and he loves bologna. So, I mean, how could you not?
Yeah, have you had a bologna sandwich
bologna
yet?
Sandwich.
Have you had one yet?
I have. Well, they're selling them for the first time this week at the game, so I'm going to grab one this week. But I've eaten bologna. I've had bologna sandwiches before, yeah, but they're selling them at this weekend's game. It's like some sort of an artisanal bread, and it's a fancy bologna sandwich, so they can go ahead and sell it for $6.
Wow. I know growing up eating bologna sandwiches, I never thought it would get to the cost of $6.
Right.
I know in Pittsburgh, that was never going to happen. I mean, let's put it this way. You can get the whole package of bologna for under $6.
You should be able to get the bologna, the mustard, and the bread.
Oh, you would think so.
For
yeah.
Under $6.
No question about it. Hey, you mentioned the wide receiver position. Without Allen Hurns and Allen Robinson, how starved is that?
Yeah, it's not good. Marquise Lee has done what he can, but he leaves the NFL in drops, and he's a guy that you know, has fought through some knee, rib injuries, and he's played well for the most part. It's just, you know, he has some occasional critical drops. You know, undrafted rookie Keelan Cole from Kentucky Wesleyan, you know, they worked him in as the number three receiver early in the year, and the game was too big for him. He's got a problem with drops. The guy that I really think people should keep an eye on is Dede Westbrook, their fourth-round pick. He's got, 9 catches in 3 games, and he was targeted 10 times last week. So, you know, he's a guy, he missed the first, half of the season because of sports hernia surgery, and he's getting a lot more work than I anticipated that he would coming into the season this late. So he's a guy that certainly is in their long-term plans. That was the guy that they drafted to be their slot receiver. And it's interesting because, you know, he's got that really deep speed that they're missing, but they don't really use him at that point now because they're still, you know, they're still trying to figure out how much they can rely on those guys.
Interesting. So you would imagine this is probably going to be a low-scoring game, wouldn't you?
Yeah. I mean, I don't see the Jags offense scoring a ton of points, I can tell you that. And it just, it's just a matter of how much does Russell Wilson get out of the pocket and kill him with those, you know, backyard plays, you know, where he eludes pressure, runs around, finds a guy open, and, you know, third and 8 is now a 25-yard gain. So, to me, you can't eliminate that completely. So he'll hit a few of those, and that'll probably be enough to get them, you know, around 17 points. I picked the Seahawks to win 24-14. So I'll stick with that. But it wouldn't surprise me if neither team got out of the 20s.
No, I would agree with that because, again, this, you know, the Seahawks have trouble on the offensive line. Their running game, for the most part, has been non-existent. But Russell Wilson is doing things I don't think I've ever seen a quarterback do. You know what? More than 80% of the yards he's responsible for. The 15 fourth-quarter touchdown passes, I mean, he has been unbelievable. And, you know, he's right up there with Carson Wentz and Tom Brady for MVP. And last I check, I guess Blake Bortles is not in the mix for that.
Yeah, I think he's a little further down.
A little further down, yeah, but that's going to go. But it's going to be a fun game. I'm looking forward to seeing you tomorrow. I'm going to be adventurous to fly cross-country today. Hopefully I'm able to make it.
Well, you know, be careful, and you might want to bring a little jacket. It's going to be cold for us. It's going to be like in the mid-50s.
No, I know. In fact, I'm bringing my cold weather gear for the sidelines because, I saw that last week, and so I've got my Puma shirt that's supposed to keep me warm. You know, I've got the extra pants and all that stuff, and I got the gloves just in case.
All right, well, I will wave at you from the warm press box.
Okay, that'll be good. Just keep the hot chocolate ready.
Exactly.
Hey, Mike, looking forward to seeing you. Mike DeRocca, ESPN.com. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Yeah, I think it's going to be a fascinating game because, again, as Mike DeRocca was saying, it's not like the Jaguars, unless the Seahawks make mental mistakes on defense, are going to score a lot of points, and that keeps Seattle in the game. And as he mentioned, I mean, Bortles may be getting better in the fourth quarter, but, you know, so much of it, I go back and I look at the kind of the two things we saw. Okay, Jared Goff scoring 30-some points a game coming in, but he's still a young quarterback, and Seattle was able to hold him down to about 16 points. Then you look at what was there for on Sunday night, Carson Wentz, who looks great, he was held to 10 points. And so you would imagine that Bortles is not equal to either one of the two. You can contain him as long as you don't make the mistakes. You can't make the turnovers, can't do the bad things. You've got to do everything as positive as you possibly can. And if they do that, then I think they have a good chance to sneak out of there with a win. Ideally, if they can get 60 yards out of the running backs, again, you now take a modest amount, and they're losing the hope maybe in the next couple weeks of getting Chris Carson back. That's a little sad, but Mike Davis is offering some things, so they're at the desperate stage at the running game, and then Russell Wilson has been phenomenal, and it's going to be interesting to see that Tashaun Gibson matchup going against Jimmy Graham, particularly if it goes into the red zone, because the red zone play right now has been phenomenal from what they're able to get. So stay tuned. It should be an interesting game. I'll be flying out, flying all day trying to get to Jacksonville, but looking forward to the game tomorrow. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.